2021. And that changing the name of the Division of Telecommunications Systems, Department of Administration, provided from effective date. This bill will clarify the legitimate use of teleconferencing for meetings and hearings held under the Administrative Procedures Act. Specifically, it will permit teleconferencing by use by publicly funded bodies for presentations, discussions, testimony, public hearings, for counting quorum and voting. 267, I'm in trouble. We're not going to hear 121. We're going to hear 267. It's identical to the original House Bill 140. A committee substitute for a 140 House bill. The finance will be heard on the House floor today. We prepared a State Affairs Committee substitute comparable to the CS for House Bill 140. This version of the teleconference procedures is favored by all concerned. Each version of the bill in your packet has been marked to indicate where the changes were made. Working with Senate Bill 267 today will enable us to deal with House Bill 140 when and if it's referred to our committee, so that we will have a light bill, if you will, and it's under the Administrative Procedures Act. And with that, Labor and Commerce, Cynthia Hoffman, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Cynthia Hoffman from the Division of Telecommunication Services in the Department of Administration. I've been asked to speak on this bill because I've been the staff person more involved with this than anybody else in our division. You've just about said it all in your introductory remarks. What this bill will do is amend the Administrative Procedures Act to permit the use of teleconferencing for the types of meetings held under the Administrative Procedures Act. It doesn't in any way force people to use the technology, it just permits them to do so, as well as to have face-to-face meetings. And we support it very much because it will allow more people to participate in the governmental process, as well as there will be potential cost savings. It is still cheaper to go to a meeting by teleconference than it is to get on an airplane and fly to it. And in these days of budget cutting, we feel that this is a very good measure to allow people their input into the public process without the associated high cost of travel, excuse me, and to allow government entities to do their business more cheaply and efficiently. As you said, SB 267 is identical to the original 140 in the House. We prefer the Finance Committee substitute. It's been through three committees in the House, and the bill as it is now in the House is, we believe, a much better bill. It calls for our department to adopt regulations regarding the use of teleconferencing, and defines teleconferencing slightly differently than the original bill. It's put in language that makes it a little tighter. And we support that and hope that you will do. And I'm prepared to answer questions if anybody has any.
If the city is having a teleconference with, say, in Anchorage, two of the members are in Hawaii, which is usually the case, they can use teleconferencing there and have a meeting with those people if they were on the teleconference without any problem.
They could. It would be as a regular meeting. There would be an agenda prepared and other materials to be considered at the meeting, and those under this bill would have to be provided at all the teleconference sites used. So they'd have to be organized enough to send out that packet ahead of time so that the person in the distant site would have all the materials in front of him or her.
That doesn't answer my question.
Oh, that they could in fact do it?
Yes.
Yes, I believe they could.
It'll be legal and everything will be fine.
Yes.
Questions from the committee. By the way, let the record show that Senator Ray and Senator Fisher have joined us. And before we start, we will get Mr. Senator Ray's suggestion. We will now, the committee will sing, "We Will Gather by the River." Let's start. Any objection? Senator Kelly.
What's the status of House Bill 140?
It's going to be heard on the House floor this morning.
Thank you.
plus 140. The same bill in the house?
Yes.
The identical bill. I will check that some.
No, I thought you said this, I said the same bill, but I thought you said it was finance committee and the health committee.
Yes, they have. It's been through three committees over there, and we prefer the final version now that's come out of House Finance, because it's tighter language, it's a better bill.
Any further questions? Senator Ray?
Yes. Just to refresh me in my memory, if 44 is the administrative procedure exactly.
Yes.
So any of the regulations that are going to be adopted by the commission of the administration must be under the administrative procedure act, same provision.
Yes, sir. So.
Well, we don't want the commissioner to make a whole bunch of regulations that for their convenience and not somebody else's for the public hearing that has to happen. In other words, there's public input.
Yes, there was a concern in the House Judiciary Committee. The original bill, Azure 267, says would establish reasonable ground rules. And the question in House Judiciary is, what's a reasonable ground rule? It sounds like a sporting event, they said. We feel, they said, it would be better for the commissioner to adopt regulations so that everybody's playing the game under the same rules. And we went along with that because it seemed to be just a little tighter than a ground rule.
No, I understand what the idea is that they don't want too many, they don't want anything hampering the public participation, and they don't want some bureaucrat making rules that you can only talk for 2 minutes and all that kind of stuff. And that's under the Supreme Court decision, regulations must be repealed by statute, and you'd have a whole body of, you'd have this whole thing going for a long time before you could get the legislature to act on it. I was curious as to put it, if it was under provision of the state machine act, where they were hearing and all that, that's fine. And the public had the input, whether they wanted it or not.
We have a letter in our file from the city and borough of Kingle regarding the one part that would be on the agenda that would just say general topic. Can you tell me if House Bill 140 has addressed that issue and what kind of changes they have made?
No, they haven't. This letter was brought to my attention yesterday by Catherine and Senator Boo's office. Mm-hmm. I talked it over with Pete Fralick of the Attorney General's office, who was the original drafter of House Bill 140, mm-hmm. and he would like to speak to that point to you. Pete?
Thank you. Yes, my name is Peter Fralick. I'm an Assistant Attorney General for the Department of Law. I came to prepare to discuss this, the point raised by Mr. Sharp's letter, as it was brought up. Essentially, what we're talking about is a policy issue, not a constitutional or legal issue. The language in question appears on the middle of page 2. I'm sorry, I'm looking at a different version of the bill.
You're looking at the big areas of page 2.
Section 310E, it's near the bottom of page 2, the amendment to section 310E, right?
What bill are you on? Yeah. What bill are you discussing, please?
267.
Are you on the committee substitute or the original?
Okay, I'm moving now to the committee substitute. That is at the middle of page 2.
Line, please, the line there.
Lines 15 and 16. The new language that would be added to existing section 310E in the Administrative Procedure Act. Right now, the existing language says that reasonable public notice shall be given for all meetings required to be open under this section, that is the open meeting statute. This bill would add language that would basically specify what that reasonable notice must consist of.
Good.
It must be the date and the time and the place of the meeting. Then the general topics to be discussed or considered at the meeting, that's Mr. Sharp's concern. And the location of any teleconferencing facilities that will be used for the meeting. Now, what we're talking about is an issue that's really not specific to teleconferencing of meetings, but public meetings in general. Does reasonable notice of that meeting include some indication of what's going to happen at the meeting? When I drafted the bill, it was, the reason I drafted the bill the way I did is that it is my view that that is included in the word reasonable. Mr. Sharp has raised some concern about the burden that this imposes on the body that's giving the notice of the meeting. I think that those concerns are, to a large extent, legitimate. There is some burden. I think the burden can be fairly easily met in, for most of the examples that you gave, by simply adding some boilerplate at the end of your, if you're listing topics in an agenda form, you can say, and anything else brought up by people present, or something like that. I don't think that boilerplate could be as broad as it suggested at the bottom of the first page of Mr. Sharp's letter, any matter of municipal concern, if you look at some municipal meeting. I think that's a little too broad to give reasonable notice.
Mr. Chairman?
I think it is just dangerous.
Well, I agree, Mr. Chairman. I suggest that if the language is included in the House Bill, so that we get rid of general topics, we would step in there. You have a state trying to place in every court of meeting, you know, that needs to be clear of any potential lawsuits you're going to run into because A, particular topic that only the best meeting discussed was not listed in the
Mr. Chairman, I see a hell of a lot of notices of meetings. And I always wonder what they're going to talk about. And if the public doesn't even know the issues being discussed, the fact that such and such a board is meeting is really not public notice if you're interested in a topic.
But we don't prohibit them from listing topics. But rather than saying you have to list every topic and therefore be perhaps legally liable, if something isn't listed and it is discussed in the decision-making on it, it's easier to take up line of judgment. But again, you know, what we're really looking at and what we're waiting for is that House Bill 140, and we don't know. Is this in 140? Do we know?
No, it is not. Sure. Yeah, it
is.
Well, okay.
Most of the time, Mr. Chairman, if you've got somebody that's going to be participating from a teleconference, the topics to be discussed are usually close to the previous to the meeting. Okay, we're going to discuss the general finances of the city borough bank region. Well, I think that the word general here is used as a generic term rather than a specific term. But I guess that's the problem. I disagree with Mr. Sharp's interpretation. I guess so. Draw so finely that I guess somebody could take it as an advisement or it has some merit, but it seems to me that the word general topic, if you take out the word general and you have to be specified exactly, the only thing that can be discussed is are those things that are posted on the board, right? It's the same way with any meeting. If that's the interpretation you put on it, then only the topics that have been labeled on the meeting, that's the only thing that can be discussed. So there shouldn't be any difference between this and the regular meeting. And whatever notices you're given for a regular meeting shouldn't be any different than this. These shouldn't be any different than a regular meeting, if a regular meeting is valid. If you can depart from the agenda in a regular meeting, certainly you can depart from it in a teleconference. It's just two guys or some other place, or somebody's giving testimony from a different place. It doesn't change the general outline or of your authority or what you're supposed to do in a meeting. I wouldn't think. I think it's a straw man.
Does Section 3 relate to just teleconference meetings or open meetings in general?
Section 3 relates to open meetings in general. Why this new language has been proposed, where it says, and the location of any teleconferencing facilities, that is part of the whole point of this bill, which is to allow and include teleconferencing as a way to conduct meetings.
The whole Administrative Procedure Act on open meetings.
Right, right. Mr. Chairman, my concern with Mr. Sharp's letter, I think I understand what his points are, but he proposes some amendments, some language. And if this language is adopted, I believe what it will mean is that the reasonable public notice for teleconference meetings will be different than the reasonable public notice for any other type of meeting. And I don't think that's terribly necessary, and I think it sets out teleconferencing as being something different than a regular meeting, and the intent of this legislation is to allow transparent technology to be used to make business easier, quicker, and cheaper to conduct. So I would be opposed to his particular suggested language because it does set out teleconferencing as something different.
Yeah, I would agree with the Senator Ray, the general is a generic thing in comparison to specific.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm still concerned about the word as the only topic to be discussed or considered, because I think we're talking about every public meeting now. You know, in the state of Alaska, covered under this Administrative Procedures Act. And I can foresee lawsuits every time something's brought up in a meeting that's not used to have a piece of paper.
Why don't we just eliminate that and then just leave it? We haven't had any problem with the, we aren't having any problem with the regular meeting notice now under the Administrative Procedures Act. In other words, we aren't having any trouble with reasonable public notice that we give for all meetings required to be open under the section. We're not having any trouble with that at all, are we?
Not that I know of.
Then why don't we just say the notice must include the date, time, and place of the meeting and the location of any teleconference facility that will be used, if that's what we're after. And forget the general topic. So why put that in there, the money to want it? Mm-hmm. Well, just eliminate that.
Mr. Chairman, yes, that was the alternative amendment that I was going to suggest to the committee, if you share the concern raised by Mr. Schott with, you know, balancing the burden on the agency of giving the notice against the information you're giving the public.
I would miss.
That affects across the board.
And then going back to what Senator Kelly brought up a moment ago, we wish to hold this bill until House Bill 4140 gets over here, and we can make that change on that one. Is that what the pleasure of the committee is then? Are there any objections to that from your standpoint?
No, except we would respectfully request that as soon as 140 gets over here.
That's assumed.
Yes, assumed. That you would please take it up as quickly as possible. We're running out of time, and I know you all are getting very, very busy, and while this is somewhat of a minor bill compared to everything else you're having to deal with this session, we'd hate to see it lost in the rush, because then we'd be faced with another long period of time without guidance.
I don't think I have to listen to why it's important. I know it's important, and I can assure you that when the bill gets over, I'll take care of it.
Thank you very much.
It doesn't make it.
You can, those people who advocate 120-day session, you can blame them exactly.
That's exactly what I've got to
do. Otherwise, wouldn't have added it to do again.
You know,
I all my constituents have voted for 120-day session. I'm not going to miss this bill at all.
Well, if you have circumstances, I have any further questions, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir.
And if you have circumstances, we will hold the bill until 140 gets over here, and when it comes over here, we'll dispatch it with great haste. Take House Bill 121. This will make technical amendments. This is changing the name of the Division of Telecommunications System in the Department Administration and provide an effective date. It will make technical amendments to 44-21-300-320, changing the name of the Division of Telecommunications to the Division of Telecommunications Operations. The new name more clearly reflects the actual functions of the division. Housekeeping measure will update the statutes to reflect the name change effective today in June 84 by Commissioner Rudd. Requirements authorities to do this position will not change. So this is nothing more or less than a name change.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Kelly.
I have a problem on this. One line 17. The Division of Telecommunications Operations must be administered by a director appointed by the commissioner.
Right.
Why must they? If the commissioner chooses not to appoint a director, why must we in the statute that they must be administered by a director?
I can't answer your question.
Why are we creating this job in staff? Why are we locking this job in staff? Is it really necessary to do that? Division of Division of Telecommunications Operations may be administered by a director. And you get a director.
Well, for the reason, I think that they, without knowing, but I think that the only thing is that they have to have somebody to want.
They don't have to.
In other words, they have to have somebody that's responsible for it. And the director is the one that's responsible for the
administration. Is there someone here that can speak to that, please?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Sue Plummer, Director of the Division of Telecommunications Services.
not to be confused with the Division of Telecommunications Operations and Systems. You said it clearly, this is just to clear up the difference between the two divisions and make the name more.
What about line 17?
Well, I don't see that we would have any serious problem one way or the other if it's must or shall. Clearly, with a division, there's going to be a director or a leader. I'm not sure that there
but
would be.
But with Senator Kelly's question, why do we have to lock it in the statutes? Do we have to lock in other directors in the statutes too?
Well, it is somewhat unique, this whole statute, in terms of that much definition regarding the two directors over the division. Why it was drafted originally that way, I'm afraid I couldn't exactly tell you.
What's the difference between telecommunications services and telecommunications operations?
Two separate divisions, two clearly separate functions. The Division of Telecommunications was systems slash operations, operates primarily out of Anchorage and statewide, mainly technician operations. That's why we want to change the name to operations and really clear that up. It got very confused, systems and services. It services, on the other hand, is a smaller policy development planning division.
Shall is mandatory, may is permissive. And
must
is mandatory too. That's the same thing. A shall is mandatory. Must. These guys finally decided that for years we told them, why don't you write it must? You must do this. Oh no. Shall. That's the state of the art. So finally now after 10 years or so now must.
They're listening to you. Right?
No. Must. Some guy got the wise idea to put must in it all the time.
Is there anybody out there in Telecopter's land that could explain and would like to say something about must or shall? And we have an attorney right with us.
I don't come from Telecopter's land, but I do come from must and shall land.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Art Peterson, Assistant Attorney General. I specialize in must and shall.
What about May? We don't have May.
May pops up sometimes too. Essentially, the history of Senator Ray is recalling correctly, Legislative Affairs Agency, back when it first formed, decided that shall would be a good word to use for any sort of mandatory provision, regardless of whether you were talking about an inanimate object or imposing a duty on an individual. So use shall throughout. That seemed awkward to a lot of people. Within the last couple of years, I'm not sure which year it changed, but Legislative Affairs changed the drafting manual, and in response to that, the Department of Law has followed the new provision in the Legislative Drafting Manual. In our Administrative Regs Drafting Manual, we had gone to a provision like that a few years back. There was some disagreement between Legislative Affairs Agency and the Department of Law on the use of this, but essentially the way we describe it, three situations. If you're imposing a duty on an individual, you say shall, because you are commanding that individual. If you are talking about a prerequisite, such as for membership on a board, all board members must be PhDs in physics. You can't command the member to go out and get a PhD in physics. What you're talking about is a prerequisite. Say one person must be a PhD, one person must be an MD, etc. Another situation is if it's in the passive voice.
This is what they're getting $75,000 a year for.
Well, with all this enlightenment, it should help legislation. In the passive voice, if it's stated in the passive voice, must, as most people would use it in normal conversation, is the preferable term. It must have shall been a roughly equivalent or some sort of obligation used in different situations. May is the permissive one. So in this bill, going from must to shall, or shall to must. So we're talking about a division. as a name, and you're talking in the passive voice, the division must be operated. To address Senator Kelly's point, if you want to not lock that in, then may would be the appropriate term. But if you want it mandatory, it ought to be with must rather than shall.
I'm not sure I'm glad I asked. Sorry, Rick.
If we can get back to it, it's the state of the art that's been manufactured by Legislative Affairs Agency. State of the drafting art. It's their determination. It's their determination, because they have the reminder of the statute that when they.
Well, we must move on, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that the Department of Law and Legislative Drafting have exhausted all possibilities.
That might be.
I was on the Style and Drafting Committee of the Constitutional Convention, and there we probably would have said. The Division of Telecommunications Operations, which is terribly clumsy, is to be administered by. Not must be, is to be.
That's another approach. You rarely see that in the statutes, but I've used that, and I like that one.
It's much more perfect.
I don't want you to read it, though.
If you sent that over, Mr. Chairman, if you sent that over to Legislative Affairs, the revisor of statutes, under the revisor's bill, would change it and put must.
Regardless
of what you put in there. In fact, they've changed the law several times. It reads better. There's no making a difference whether it changes the law or them. But it reads better.
Does anyone have an amendment they wish to make? If not, then we'll go on.
Go on, what?
Go on to what we were trying to get out with must and shall and name.
All this does is just change the name of an existing operation.
That's all it does. That's what I said the first
time. I would move it out with individual recommendations.
Thank you very much. Any objections? Very much.
Thank you.
The next bill we're taking up.
We have a substitute, Mr. Chairman.
Senate Bill 225. Now, the committee previously heard this bill on March the 26th. At that time, we requested some additional information concerning the personnel affected by the raids. We received that information. It was sent to my offices on Monday and is in your packets. We have two amendments, dated 321 and 326. We discussed these, but they were not adopted. And we also have a proposed title change.
Mr. Chairman, in the interest of so that we don't get fouled up with this thing, what we're talking about is the judiciary and the executive branch. So why don't we, I would move that we change the title, otherwise you're liable to get anything in the world on this thing.
Okay, I believe we do have a.
Ask you not to change the title to the amendment the way it looks there.
You're familiar with the title?
Yes.
An act relating to compensation of state officers and employees not covered by collective bargaining or officers or employees of the executive or judicial branch of state government, the employees of the university or permanent employees of the legislative branch, providing for effective date.
Right.
There is a motion on the motion to adopt the amendment for the title change. Are there objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
I think we should move the final. Yeah, let's just move it out. Just move.
I would make a note, though, that the governor's bill does allow himself and the lieutenant governor a raise and does not authorize the legislature a raise. Just noting the fact.
Mr. Peterson, would you join us, please? Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I'm Art Peterson, Assistant Attorney General. On the point Senator Kelly just made, I'm not sure if I heard him accurately. There is provision for the legislature's scheduled raise. The only thing that the legislature is not covered by in the bill is that Section 3 compensatory payment, the one-shot lump sum payment.
Does the governor get that?
Yes.
Well-deserved, of course.
Do we still want that to happen? No. I don't think we care for it, personally.
I don't want to
sound the least.
Yeah, maybe we could ask him what sections we could change in order to remove ourselves.
There's a provision in 24. I guess I have that here somewhere.
And I don't think it's implemented in June.
Mike, you know that offhand?
24, 20 something.
Senator Reed.
Senator Kelly, and then we pass an amendment for this bill to remove all of the elected officials. Remember, we were discussing the situation about the budget. Do you have that back? Oh, it didn't pass. Oh. You may have discussed it back in the November. Oh, okay.
24, 15, 20. Would be the statute you would have to amend to take yourselves out of the automatic scheduled increases. In other words, what, pardon?
Is it in here?
It's not cited in section 3 because you're not getting a lump sum. It exists now, plugging you into range X, whatever it may be, in the current statute, which when sections 1 and 2 are amended,
section 4,
then your pay is already increased.
Mr. Chairman, section 4.
Section 4 applies to your employees.
It's not them, Mr. Peterson. They're not the chairman of the government account. Section 4, subsection B, where it talks about legislative employees, this is a COLA, 2.5% COLA. That's exactly what it is.
What do we have to do, let me, Mr. Chairman, what do we have to do to exempt the legislative branch of government from receiving anything under this bill?
Right.
That's what I was trying to address.
Period. All employees in legislative branch.
If you want, how about yourself? You're talking about your employees and yourselves? Okay. For the employees, all you have to do is amend section 4 to delete the reference to legislative employees. For the members, you would have to add a section amending 24-15-20 to reduce the designation of the range and step that is now in the statute. In other words, if it says whatever, 20A, and if the effect of the increases in sections 1 and 2 raise you 2 steps or whatever, put yourself back down 2 steps in the amendment to 24-15-20.
Then, Mr. Chairman, if you want to remove everything that has to do with the legislature, you start on line 27, page 3. Let me pick out and legislative branches. First is on line 27. Then you go down to the permanent temporary employment of the judicial branch, and then the delete and the permanent employees of the legislative branch. You delete and the permanent employees of the legislative branch. And you go over to the next page. And then you, on line 4, you say the judicial employees described in any of the section title receive compensatory, okay? That's what you do, and then you go back to the amendment in the title, and you eliminate or permanent employees of the legislative branch, in the legislative branch. You put the semicolon at the University of Alaska, and then you got it.
Well, Chairman, I have a question.
Senator Fisher.
We're not taken up by this.
Yeah.
Do these exclusions just may affect legislators?
I'm not sure I heard everything he said. When he's talking about section 4, the answer is no, unless you consider yourself employees. I don't think that would be the normal interpretation. You're not employees of the legislature.
Well, where are we then?
That's what I was talking about.
You said, segment.
They said we need another
Mr.
segment.
Mr. Peterson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You folks are in AS 24-15-020. That statute plugs you into the schedules that are in section 1. By amending these statutes in section 1 and section 2, your salary changes, just as the governor's does, just as all those people covered by the statute you see in section 3. Your statute is not listed in section 3. That's because you don't get the lump sum payment. But if you want to keep yourselves at the same level, there are two approaches. Either the one I mentioned a moment ago, amend the statute I cited for your salary to bump you back down a couple of steps as these schedules bump up a couple of steps. Or, as Mike Mullen has just suggested, perhaps amend your statute simply to say as it existed on and then specify a particular date. Now, that has the advantage of simplicity. The disadvantage to that second approach would be that one cannot look at your statute and then look at the schedule and see right there in the statute what it is now.
You'd have to look at either a footnote or an old edition of the statute or an old supplement or something like that. So it's a little inconvenient. Can be done, can be pinpointed with accuracy. It's just not quite as convenient.
I can understand what Mr. Peterson's saying, but if you're starting to fool around with this and then add and subtract, you're going to get into some terrible trouble here. So I would, if you want to remove the permanent employees in the legislative branch, I would suggest that we make the amendments in Section 4 and eliminate that section in the title if it says or permanent employees in the legislative branch instead of finance.
Mr. Chairman? Senator Fisher.
Mr. Chairman, I would strenuously object to eliminating legislative employees if we're giving the raise to everybody else. I think that a lot of these raises are excessive, and if we're going to look at any category, we should be looking at all of them and do something about them, or shift the whole thing to finance and let them handle it, but not pick up one group of employees only.
Mr. Chairman,
I'm sorry.
I agree with Senator Fisher, and I would move, if with your consent, I would move to fill out
I object. I think the legislative employees are overpaid.
I object to that because you pay peanuts, you get monkeys, and that's just what
well,
I said.
If you say you got monkeys, then everybody
has. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
No. It has been. Is there anybody else who wish to say?
I want to be on record.
Mr.
Chairman, I want to be on record. You heard what I said, I hope.
Yes, I
did. And I want that on the record.
It's on the record. You get my statement on it, too.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to make one last, if not necessarily dying pitch, but one last comment on behalf of the amendments I suggested in my March 21 and March 26 letters to you. They are intended to achieve parity both within the executive branch and between the executive branch and the other branches. In Section 4, we've taken care of the other branches. It turns out there are some categories within the executive branch that are not covered by sections 1, 2, 3, or 4. By putting them in Section 4, then we put everybody on the same plane and we deal with everybody fairly. That's the purpose of the March 21st and 26th amendments.
Thank you for your kind statement, sir. It has been moved, it has been moved with this bill pass out of committee with individual recommendations for the title change. Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
From members, anyway.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chairman.
You very much.
Committee.
What do we do it?
Come for the minute. Adjourned.